Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, this is the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show, your weekly look into the wide, wacky, wonderful world of mixed martial arts. If that's the podcast you were hoping to find, you have done everything right so far. If not, please stick around anyway. We appreciate the patronage. I'm Robert Winfrey, and I'm your host every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's when this show goes live. Thanks again for listening. I say this all the time, but the fact that you guys are out there and you choose to listen to this show, to read things that I write, any of it, it's a little bit mind-boggling to me, and it is perpetually humbling, so thank you for all of that. It means a great deal to me. All right, tonight we are going to be reviewing UFC 202, the rematch that, for as little as I cared about that fight, the rematch between McGregor and Diaz. Didn't like it, didn't care about it, didn't care about their first fight. Turned out to be a pretty darn good fight, surprisingly so in many ways. So we'll be talking about that card, and we will be previewing UFC on Fox 21. You see, UFC 202 yesterday kicked off 9 consecutive weeks of UFC action. That's not a joke. It's not a... I counted them up. 9. In fact, between now and the end of the year, there are only 2 weekends without a UFC card. There is the one on the 22nd at the end of this stretch of 9 in October, and Christmas. And that's it. Other than that, every week, baby. I'm okay with that. But if any of that is on your mind or anything else pertaining to the sport of mixed martial arts, and you have a question, a comment, something you'd like the panel here to address, I'm happy to take live callers. If you would like to do so, the number is 323-657-0901. Once again, 323-657-0901. If you would like to call in using Skype, I can only wish you the best of luck. There is a Skype icon on the Blog Talk Radio player page. It's off-center. It's on the top of the player, off-center to the right. Click on it, then there's going to be some dialog boxes that open up that you're going to have to click through. If you do that, you hopefully will come from my switchboard and I will get you on the air. Blog Talk and Skype do not always get along. So I'm just throwing it out there. There's a chance you might just get dropped every time you try. That's usually what happens to me. Some other issue might happen. But if that's how you would like to try, I can wish you the best of luck and tell you that I would be still very happy to take your call if you can get through. All right. Here with me, as always, my regular partner in crime, the 411 Mania, jack of all trades, because he's in all the zones, a hardworking man, and my partner in crime, Jeff Harris, is with us. How you doing this evening, Jeff?
There's only one Jeffrey Harris. Here he is, Jeffrey Harris. Singing the song, walking along, Jeffrey Harris is on the 411 Ground and Pound Radio Show. Good evening, Robert Winfrey, and good evening, listeners. If you're watching SummerSlam and you have us on in the background, thank you. Or if you're listening to us live and have SummerSlam on in the background, also thank you. But if you listen to us later, thank you nonetheless.
if this is, you know, several hundred years in the future and an alien race has finally got a hold of all the digital information we pumped out during this time of human development. Thank you for listening then as well. We'll take it all.
Thank you, aliens.
Oh, great. Now the aliens guy is in my head. All right. Let's jump right into this. Last night, UFC 202, I'm on record many times over as not caring about Conor McGregor fighting Nate Diaz. I didn't care about it the first time. I cared slightly less about it the second time. Second time, we had a pretty good fight. A lot of people are very high on this fight right now. This is a top five fight of the year so far for me. Borderline. It's number four or five. I really have to... The year-end stuff is coming, and I'm going to have to settle out some of these, you know, fight of the year, knockout of the year, submission of the year, etc. in the near future. But this was a pretty good fight. Conor McGregor made some very important adjustments from the first Diaz fight. Specifically, his game plan was not, I'm going to hit him until he falls over. His game plan was much more nuanced. He used leg kicks very well, even though he doesn't apparently kick all that hard. And look, when I say that, it's not an insult to McGregor, necessarily. But for comparison, Rafael Dos Anjos over three rounds landed fewer leg kicks than McGregor did over this five-round fight, and his had a lot more impact. But they were good kicks. These weren't foot kick. He wasn't landing with the foot. He was getting in there with some of those kicks. Disrupted Diaz, moved a lot better. Didn't brawl with Nate Diaz. Did a lot better job picking his shots, moving. He still gassed in the second round, spent the third round just getting beat up. He borderline lost that. I mean, that third round was almost a 10-8 round for Diaz from where I was sitting. And one of the judges gave it to him, which I don't necessarily disagree with. McGregor did a lot of backing up and a lot of getting hit. McGregor found his second win kind of in the fourth round and a little bit in the fifth. Diaz, the game plan to beat Nate Diaz is neither complicated nor secret. It's roughly the same game plan to beat his brother Nick. There's a few things you have to do. Kicking technique is very helpful, both to the leg and body. Good movement. Don't brawl with them. And if you're don't get caught in the kind of in-between spaces, the clinch specifically. If you let either of the Diaz brothers dictate the clinch, you're not having a good night. You're better off at that point just kind of taking them down and working from there. It's just, and again, this is not to say that it's easy to do. Knowing how to beat someone strategically and on paper is one thing. Executing it is a whole different ballgame. And McGregor did a good job of executing. He still has some cardio issues. Which is not, it's something to pay attention to. It's something to be aware of, but it's not a hugely limiting factor. Better fighters.
Fighting up against a much bigger guy.
True. I just mean that, you know, against nonstop all-action fighters, Rafael Dos Anjos, Khabib Nurmagomedov, Frankie Edgar to varying degrees, he's in a lot more trouble in that third round and in the subsequent rounds than he is with Diaz because of the style. But, you know, maybe he fights those. I mean, there's a lot of variables there still, but he did a lot better. This was his first fight that went five rounds. Again, there's still some issues with his cardio, but he did a much better job pacing himself, a much better job thinking his way through the fight instead of just kind of reacting or, you know, hoping his opponent falls over after a punch or two. He's still got substantial power in his blows. McGregor has tremendous power. And I'm looking forward to him fighting. I don't hate, you know, the rematch with Aldo. I would love to see him fight Max Holloway again, but I don't think it's happening. And, you know, he got back on the horse, got back on the winning side of things. You know, just a very entertaining fight, generally speaking, if not the most relevant or, from my perspective at least, technically engaging. But, again, your mileage may vary. A lot of people were very happy with this fight. And I might feel differently about it when I rewatch it, when I'm not having to sit there and live blog it, that my experience with the different fights alters depending on whether or not I'm doing that. So, Jeff, you and I were kind of in the same camp as far as not caring about this fight, but in execution, what did you think? Did you enjoy yourself?
It was a fine fight. It was a close fight. No, I mean, I know I was really outspoken with how I picked Diaz the first time, and we all went all in on Diaz this time, and we were all wrong. The 411 Mania curse struck again here because we went 4-0, and the opposite result happened. That being said, I mean, look, this was a close fight. Even though I scored it for McGregor, it was legitimately close, and I know some people feel that Diaz won. I don't, but it was a close fight. So Conor McGregor, he gets his moral victory over Diaz. He gets his win over Diaz. You're the champion, Conor. Do your job, man. You got to take care of that business. So if they want to try and justify giving him the lightweight title fight, I mean, I can kind of see it. I don't really like it because, you know, you have guys like Tony Ferguson who are well overdue, and then you have Khabib Nurmagomedov. You have all those things going on. The problem is there's only – Conor McGregor is one guy, yet he is one of the top draws in the sport. But he's just one guy. Not everyone can be Conor McGregor, and not everyone can fight Conor McGregor, but everyone wants to fight Conor McGregor and get the shine, get some of that shine that he gives you. It was the same thing with Chael Sonnen. When Chael Sonnen, in his heyday, like you had guys in every weight class trying to challenge and fight him because, you know, if you could fight Chael Sonnen, you could get big money and you could probably beat it. And the thing is about Conor, we've seen him lose now in the UFC. Only tougher matchups are ahead for him. And my problem is like, every time he loses, we can't reset and let him run in again. I mean, we have to move on and keep the divisions moving. Featherweight is kind of the problem here. But the fight was fine for what it was. I enjoyed it, but I still think it was a mistake. I think it was a mistake the first time. And I don't want to see – I don't want a trilogy fight, period. But they're already, you know, putting it out there because now they're 1-1. So trilogy fight it is. I hope we don't see it anytime soon. I have no interest in seeing this fight a third time, quite honestly. Even though I like this fight, I don't want to see it again.
I will accept a trilogy fight between these two so long as two conditions are met. One, between now and then, McGregor either drops the featherweight title or actually defends it. Two, McGregor is not the lightweight champion, because if he becomes lightweight champion, you don't get to pick and choose your opponents at lightweight, buddy. You have three or four deserving contenders that are chomping at the bit. You don't get to cherry pick Nate Diaz for a title shot when you have deserving contenders like Khabib Nurmagomedov, Tony Ferguson, Rafael Dos Anjos. Crap, who's the other one?
Khabib.
I mentioned Khabib. There's another guy in that discussion. I mean, look, Eddie Alvarez, depending on how that plays out. Donald Cerrone wants to move back to lightweight, apparently.
I don't think that's happening.
I don't either, but you can't tell me the fan base wouldn't go nuts at the thought of Cerrone and McGregor.
And, all right, I agree with those conditions, and it also has to be at lightweight. No more of this welterweight nonsense.
Yeah. That's the other thing. McGregor needs to figure out what weight class he's going to be competing in Not that you can't play around with them. I'm okay with that, but there are degrees to which it's okay, and there are degrees to which it's just stupid.
I mean, this fight should have been at welterweight too. Now, maybe like you can say McGregor had a set of stones and felt he needed to prove something or some nonsense, but to me, there's no reason this fight should have been at welterweight either, but go figure.
I understand kind of the mentality of I want the same circumstances if I'm going to do this over and prove that it was kind of a mistake. That being said, and guys, I really have to stress this, Nate Diaz is a lightweight.
I mean, yeah, we're already talking about a career lightweight in Nate Diaz, who's only had a handful of fights at welterweight.
He went,
so
what, 2-2 at welterweight?
Yeah, he was. His welterweight record beforehand in the UFC was nothing to write home about. So
he's not fighting a guy like, even a guy like Rick Story,
right?
Who, you know, lost last night, but top, you know, a top shelf guy, or, you know, Neil Magny, Lorenz Larkin, Kelvin Gastelum. He's not fighting a career welterweight who's a big guy, an established welterweight. He's fighting a blown up lightweight.
Right.
And the fight was awesome, but again, his success against Nate Diaz is in no way indicative of success at that weight class when he has to take on, you know, substantial welterweights. You know, again, the guys like Robbie Lawler, Tyron Woodley, Stephen Thompson, Roy McDonald, big, talented welterweights. That's a whole different ballgame from Nate Diaz. I think he wants to fight at welterweight because if he fights at welterweight, that's the same weight class that ye old CM Punk is planning to fight in. So the possibility of McGregor versus Punk as nothing more than a freak show attraction does exist, ladies and gentlemen. That possibility is out there, just as a thought. And I hate myself
that's
for saying that out loud.
No.
Texas would regulate that. Just saying. As for both guys moving forward, again, McGregor, defend the featherweight belt or drop the featherweight belt.
Well, he was asked this at his press conference. Like all the main card winners were basically given their own press conference last night. He says, you know, he basically said he doesn't want to fight Aldo because he beat Aldo in 13 seconds, even though Aldo's the interim champion now, and he didn't have really like a great finish over Frankie Edgar. And then, you know, he's also saying, well, they can't strip me of the title and give it to the guy I beat in 13 seconds because that would bury the division and put them back on the prelims. Well, okay, Connor, but we can't have a champion of a division who's not going to go back down and defend the belt again. I mean, that buries the division as well with a stupid, pointless interim title, and another guy who's been looking spectacular lately, Max Holloway, has gone 9-0 without receiving a title shot, and he's a guy that lost to Conor McGregor too. So I mean, he can't get the opportunity because you don't deem him worthy enough. I mean, yeah, he did lose to Conor before, but guess what, Conor, you lost to Nate Diaz. And you got that rematch that, I mean, made no sense. So, I mean, look, I like Conor McGregor, but the UFC's created a monster here, and they're letting him run wild. And I don't know what the solution is, but I don't think he should be allowed to run wild like this and call every – I think he should get input, but I don't think he should get to call all the shots like this. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I really want to see him fight Max Holloway again. That fight was over 3 years ago, or about 3 years ago. Yeah, it was about 3 years, a little over 3 years ago.
Holloway is a different fighter.
Yeah. He is a much different fighter now. He's gone 9-0 since then. I mean, we're not rushing in. This is not an immediate rematch. This is not being rushed. This is a fight I actually want to see a second time. McGregor and Aldo a second time, I am substantially less interested in many ways, but that's the circumstance the UFC created. There's one potential caveat here for McGregor to keep the featherweight belt for his next fight and not defend it immediately. If the UFC decides that on the strength of going 1-1 against Nate Diaz, that McGregor gets a shot at the lightweight title for a chance to become the only man, the only fighter in UFC history to hold two belts in two different weight classes at the same time, that would be concurrently, not consecutively, Goldberg, you moron. Then I'm okay with that. I'm okay with giving your biggest star the opportunity to make history like that. Provided it is written in stone that his next fight is either at featherweight or that he will be dropping that title and focusing on defending the lightweight belt. That is the only circumstance where I personally find that acceptable. And really, if I'm, you know, Tony Ferguson and I beat Dos Anjos and I don't get a title shot, I'm like driving to McGregor's house and fighting him in his backyard. And Tony Ferguson's crazy enough to do that, mind you. But it's an interesting conundrum that the UFC finds itself in. I'm curious to see how this whole thing plays out. But McGregor, you can only play around with not defending the belt while taking other fights for so long. I mean, and there are degrees to which I understand. I mean, look, Jose Aldo, before he lost the belt, had a couple of injuries that postponed fights. I say this frequently because people... Here's my thing about this. Jose Aldo had the same number of title fights rescheduled during the totality of his UFC title reign as Chris Weidman did over the totality of Weidman's UFC title reign. But nobody whines at Chris Weidman.
I do.
Now, I know, generally speaking, nobody complains about Chris Weidman. You do. You are very fair about that. You hate guys who get injured, which is fine. I accept that. Jeff is very fair about that. I just mean that in general, people harp on Aldo when he was a lot less injury prone than, again, Chris Weidman, for example.
I don't know. I think Weidman has been criticized for that.
Yes, and again, yes and no.
Okay.
Pettis, I think, had roughly the same number of injury replacement fights fall through due to injury as well. And again,
his career has suffered for it.
He's desperately trying to reclaim relevance at featherweight. And
with one more loss, he could be out of the UFC, quite frankly.
To be honest, Charles Oliveira might beat him. Just a thought. And McGregor, it's been less than a year since he won the title. I don't like deserving contenders not getting opportunities while the champion is still an active fighter. Max Holloway is a deserving contender.
Max Holloway has won 9 fights.
He has the third longest active UFC.
These fights. He's winning them all in dramatic fashion. And we can't just keep putting everything on hold. All right, yeah, Conor McGregor is the biggest star of all time, but, I mean, you know, look, we still have a division, we still have titles, and if we're going to do that, I mean, you know, we need to figure it out. It's that simple.
Yeah. And I'm okay with him getting some leeway. I really am. You know, if you're that big a star, there are considerations that have
but
to be made.
Got
I'm
Robert
okay with that.
On his leeway, he did the deed. He did. I mean, they were going to give him the fight with Dos Anjos. That fell apart. So they did a Diaz fight. He lost, and then he wanted a rematch. They gave him that. He's gotten his leeway.
I agree.
No one. the UFC didn't even want to do this fight, this rematch with Diaz. This was the fight he wanted. And they gave it to him at welterweight, which is what he wanted. He's gotten his leeway. It's time to, you know, it's time to crap or get off the pot. That's how I feel. And I don't, and yeah, he is Conor McGregor. I don't care, man. And you know what? If there was a play, if there was a fighters union and fighters were given more power and control, I still don't think they should have this much control to call these kind of shots. I honestly believe that. I'm sorry.
I don't necessarily disagree with you. Again, there's very few circumstances under which I accept his next fight being anything other than defending the featherweight title.
They John Cena literally just did the code red on AJ Styles on some page. They're just busting out. They're doing like indie rhythmic moves right now.
Hey, PWG version of John Cena is freaking awesome.
That's pretty much what they're doing. It's basically like a PWG match right now. They're all just doing all the super moves, and they're all kicking out of all of them. So sorry, little tangent there, but I just seeing John Cena do a code red, it was kind of hilarious. So sorry.
Especially
about
to
that.
A guy as much smaller than he is as AJ Styles is.
Yeah, exactly. Just the visual of him doing that move on AJ. Yeah. It's as hilarious as it sounds. I thought he was about to do rolling German, but he did a rolling German into like an inverted powerbomb, basically.
Yeah, those two can wrestle forever, and I'll be happy.
They're just doing moves. It's pretty much a spot fest. It's pretty much what it is right now.
That's okay. Those have their place. Nate Diaz has said he will not fight until he gets a third fight with Conor McGregor. I'm okay with that.
Never seeing Nate Diaz fight again, actually.
I don't hate Nate Diaz the way you do. But that's okay.
I just don't like the way he acts. I don't like the way his brother acts. I don't like the scrap pack stuff. And he was doing interviews last night talking like he won. Look in the mirror, Nate. You look like you got jumped by four guys. You're talking about how you were, you know, I'm going to party now. I'm going to be partying like a winner. He's on crutches. Well, guess what, dude? I just saw a video of Conor McGregor partying at Intrigue nightclub. So what? The guy, I mean, if you're going to be like that guy who's like, I won, and if you really want to judge who was like, okay, look at their faces, well, Diaz was the one with the more jacked up face last night. So it doesn't really, just things like that just drive me insane. You're the one that got dropped. He got dropped in the fight multiple times by McGregor. So, I mean, if that shoe was on the other foot, you'd still be saying you won the fight because you dropped him. So, I mean, who cares? Sore loser, excuses. I can't. And the Diazes do that all the time. They act like they're real fighters because of that. And I hate that. I hate that entitled, I'm a real fighter because I fight like this attitude. It ticks me off to no end. It always has.
I figure that the reason I have more tolerance for both of them is, well, Nate in particular, is I don't read their interviews as much as you do. So my exposure to the stuff that wears on you is a little bit less than yours. I have no time and patience for Nick Diaz at all. But I'm okay with him waiting simply because both the Diaz brothers do not function well as simply members of the roster. There's a different kind of way you have to deal with them to maximize both their personal earning potential and the amount you can get from them as a promoter. And it's not them fighting, you know, the rank and file of their respective divisions. It just doesn't really work that way to any great effect. And look, if McGregor you know, tries to become lightweight champion, fails, won't defend the featherweight belt, gets stripped of it. I'm okay with him fighting Nate Diaz again at that point. And that's a perfectly valid path that could happen. Nate Diaz waiting for a rematch with McGregor. Okay. Doesn't bother me in the least one way or the other. I don't consider Nate Diaz a truly elite level lightweight as a general rule, but so I don't think he's getting passed over. I don't think he's holding up, you know, the division to any great degree. If he wants to wait for that potential, all right, I don't mind it. And again, depending on the circumstances, I'm not going to potentially hate a third fight between them. All right, the co-main event. Boy, howdy.
This was my fight of the night.
All 13 seconds of it.
All 13 seconds.
Anthony Johnson knocked the stuffing out of Glover Teixeira.
And a tooth, too, I think.
Something. I don't know if it was a tooth or if it was spit or what, but... man... I mean, look, I've joked in the past about either Mark Hunt or the Korean Superboy Do-Ho Choi being kind of the avatars for Saitama from One Punch Man. But in all seriousness, Anthony Johnson will ruin your whole week with one punch. It was one clean right uppercut, Glover Teixeira flopped backwards and promptly forgot math. That the year was 2016, and that he had moved to the United States.
Trump is the Republican candidate for president.
I was going to say, I imagine he woke up and thought Chuck Liddell was the champion again. I mean, that's how hard he got hit. He was unconscious for 3 to 4 seconds. I mean, the fight was stopped like immediately. He fell down and that thing was over. He was out for 3 to 4 seconds. He woke up and tried to take down the referee. Okay, this was a violent, brutal knockout. Anthony Johnson is a bad man, except I don't think he'll beat either Daniel Cormier or Jon Jones. Which is an odd position for him to wind up in, but I mean, I give him a better chance against Cormier than Jones. And look, I honestly don't know what is up with Jon Jones. There's a real possibility that he faces either just a 6-month suspension or no suspension at all, based on rumblings and, you know, from MMA journalists. I'm a big fan of Jon Jones in the cage. As soon as that door shuts, I'm a huge fan. Best fighter ever. And it pains me to say that in many ways because I love Demetrius Johnson so much, but it's Jon Jones. But I think you go Cormier and Johnson next. I mean, look, his fight ended in 13 seconds. You could book him in DC for the end of the year, provided there's no other circumstances that get involved, and you could have that, and Jon Jones just fights the winner whenever his situation gets cleared up. But I'm okay with the UFC putting Jones on the sidelines for the next title fight and going with Rumble in DC in a rematch. I'm okay with that completely.
I mean, look, you might as well, because Johnson was a guy he was supposed to fight at one point, and if Cormier wins, I mean, like, that's the – I mean, you have the grudge match there as well.
Yeah, Jones is going to interest regardless of who he fights, whether it's Johnson or Cormier. There's not a bad choice there for John's return opponent.
Right.
So, I mean, it was 13 seconds, and you apparently loved all of it. So, Anthony Johnson, next title contender – he's knocked out both Glover Teixeira and Alexander Gustafsson in the first round. You've got to give him that shot. Yeah, but Ryan Bader doesn't. No one cares about Ryan Bader.
But, I mean,
bring
look,
up.
Ritter was on a winning streak at the time, top five, you know, just beating Rashad Evans. So, I mean, it counts for me.
Okay. I bring up those two specifically because they are both former title challengers. In Gustafson's case, he went, again, five rounds with Jones in a competitive fight. He went five rounds with Cormier in a competitive fight. I mean, there are people out there who argue he won both of those. I disagree, but I understand your points. And Anthony Johnson knocked him out in the first round. Teixeira went five rounds with John. He lost every one of them, but he went all five. Gus knocked him out with one punch. Give the man, I mean, and look, I know he lost to Cormier, and honestly, I might pick Cormier in the rematch. I picked Johnson the first time around because Cormier's chin was a question mark. Not weak, but just I'd never seen him be hit really, really hard. Well, we saw him get hit really, really hard, and he got back up. But in Johnson's defense, he was preparing for John Jones. Daniel Cormier is like the opposite of John Jones. John Jones is very tall, very long, and will fight you pretty much everywhere. Daniel Cormier is short, not very long, and an extraordinarily talented wrestler with a game that is geared towards that. It's not that he can't do other stuff, but that's where his game is geared. You almost couldn't pick a more different stylistic fight to take on however short notice that fight was for Johnson and Cormier. It was like 2 weeks.
No, it was more like 4 weeks.
4 weeks, okay. Still, it's, again, it was a complete 180 from what he had been preparing for.
Well,
so
I think it's fine if we do this fight again just because of what Johnson has done recently, because we still don't know what's going on with John Jones for right now. Johnson, I mean, he did hurt Cormier in the first round. The problem is that Cormier was able to take that shot and come back, and then he completely broke Johnson with the wrestling in that ground and pound, and just made, I mean, he literally stole Johnson's soul in that fight. But Johnson was able to come back and look fantastic nonetheless. I mean, Gustafson lost that fight, and he still came back and gave Cormier one of the toughest battles we've ever seen in a fight of the year candidate. So I'm fine with getting that rematch. I think we should, but, I mean, again, there's this whole question mark with John Jones, and if I was Johnson, I'd be a little more concerned about that. He said he wasn't worried at all in his post-fight press conference last night. If I was him, I'd be a little more worried, and I'd be getting on the phone with Ari Emanuel, his management team, and whoever to get this all sorted out as soon as possible.
Yeah, I really I want Johnson to fight for the belt again. Again, I don't think I'll pick him, but he's earned the shot.
What a knockout artist he's become. I mean, I saw his potential at welterweight, but I mean, I didn't think he'd be such a legitimate light heavyweight contender like this.
Yeah, I agree. His career turnaround was very impressive, and man, he will he will ruin your whole week. Just one blow. All right, next up, we had a welterweight fight. Donald Cerrone defeated Rick Story via TKO in the second round.
Well, I called this one right, at least.
You did. You called this one right. I need to mention something about my analysis. Rick Story, and I forgot this, and I have no one but myself to blame.
There's no head movement.
Well, he's got no head movement, and I genuinely forgot what a hot and cold fighter he is. When Rick Story is on, he is really, really good. I mean, he's basically a professional spoiler. He was the first guy to beat Johnny Hendricks.
Gunnar Nelson.
Beat Gunnar
at least
Nelson.
In the UFC, right?
Yeah, he was Gunnar Nelson's first UFC loss when Gunnar Nelson was hyped to the gills.
Right.
He beat Tarek Saffiedine when Saffiedine was coming back. He should have beaten Kelvin Gastelum. Every time I've seen that fight, I score it for story. I'm just throwing that out there.
I mean, he beat Thiago Alves. That was an upset. Spoiler is a very good word for story. He's been the underdog many times, and he's excelled in that role many times. But as you pointed out, he's also been very hot and cold throughout his career, where he's trading wins and losses. And I think sometimes we just forget how gifted of a fighter Donald Cerrone is. And he's not at welterweight, he's not losing any steps at all. If anything, he might be better at welterweight than he was at lightweight. And he was a contender at lightweight. So, I mean, that's scary to think about.
Yeah. Rick Story fought very stupidly in this fight.
He's done that before. We've seen that.
Yeah. And I'm kicking myself because, I maintain that, you know, he's got a good chance at beating Donald Cerrone, but he fought, when he went out there last night, he executed very poorly. He didn't try to close distance. He didn't work the body. He only had the one takedown, but I'm not going to get too much on him for that. Deciding to fight, not to grapple with Cerrone is a valid.
And, look,
and even when he did okay, but he stood there and he let Donald Cerrone find his range. He let Cerrone get going. And once that second round hit and Donald finally got out of first gear, which is Cerrone is, you know, being a notoriously slow starter. If you don't pressure him in the first round, by the time that second one comes around, he's gonna kick your ass. The combination he threw to finish this fight was beautiful. Beautiful body shot, beautiful head kick, good follow-up, just glorious.
And for all of Cerrone's flaws, Roberts, he's good at that. And I think some people just forget, like, yes, he loses all those big critical fights. He loses those title fights. But more often than not, he is, I think, one of the most well-rounded fighters in the game. And I stand by that. Yeah, he is a little weak to the body. He is a little weak with his head movement, but in terms of just his overall skills, his boxing, kickboxing, and grappling, I think, are some of the best in the UFC. And, I mean, am I wrong here? I mean, look at what he's done.
No, Cerrone has a very, very good, very solid skill set that is good pretty much anywhere.
This is why the reason he's challenging Eddie Alvarez and sort of has a good claim there. He dominated Alvarez. He beat Alvarez. He outboxed Eddie Alvarez, who's a very good MMA boxer.
Yeah, I actually, when I scored that fight live, when I covered the event where he and Alvarez fought, I actually gave Cerrone all three rounds. Every subsequent viewing has kind of had me kicking myself going, no, you moron, Alvarez won the first. The second two rounds are not close. Cerrone clearly takes rounds 2 and 3 in that contest.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, Donald, you haven't fought at lightweight since Rafael Dos Anjos bitch slapped you and sent you out of the division. And there's, again, 2 or 3 legitimate contenders who have a claim that is slightly greater than yours. Here's all I want out of life right now. And this is a very simple thing, I think. I don't want Donald Cerrone fighting for the lightweight belt. I don't want him to fight Eddie Alvarez. All I want is for Donald Cerrone to stay at welterweight and fight Robbie Lawler. That's it.
I love that fight. And I hope
this
it happens.
This is all I want out of MMA for the next 6 months. I want that fight to be discussed. I want it to be signed, and I want it to happen. That's it.
Oh, I think Donald Cerrone would fight George St. Pierre if he was offered that fight.
Donald Cerrone would fight Mark Hunt if he was offered the fight. Donald Cerrone's crazy. And it's fine. I love Donald Cerrone. And incidentally, I do want to see Donald Cerrone fight Mark Hunt. It will never happen, mind you, but part of me just want, because you know they both sign for it. In the real world, Donald Cerrone and Robbie Lawler are both welterweights at the moment. Robbie Lawler's coming off of that loss. Violent first-round loss. Donald Cerrone will be around the top 10. I want Donald Cerrone to fight Robbie Lawler. This is all I want from MMA in the immediate future. Please.
I mean,
make that
don't
happen.
This win, I mean, couldn't you arguably rank Cerrone solidly in the top 10 right now?
In the UFC, if I'm only ranking guys in the UFC, if I don't have to worry about welterweights from other divisions, just the UFC. Okay, Neil Magny drops after the loss to Larkin. Larkin actually gets ranked. Gastelum, who is for some reason ranked above Magny, a guy he lost to. I mean, now it makes a little bit more sense now that Magny's lost.
Hendrick. I mean, whatever.
I'm not saying he shouldn't have been ranked or he shouldn't have been, you know, in the top 10. I'm saying he lost to Neil Magny. He should not have been ranked above Neil Magny.
Right.
But Magny's lost now. Now it makes more sense. Magny drops. Larkin moves up. Story lost. He drops. Hendricks drops tremendously after that loss to Gastelum. Yeah, I can see Cerrone around somewhere between 9 and 11. Makes perfect sense to me, in all honesty. Perfect sense. Just, yeah, I want him to fight Robbie Lawler. It's a relevant fight for the division because if Cerrone beats Robbie Lawler, which is possible, mind you, I'm okay with him fighting for the belt. And I don't care if that's Stephen Thompson or George St. Pierre or Tyron Woodley, if Woodley holds on to the belt. I don't care. If he beats Robbie Lawler, I am 100% okay with a guy with Cerrone's tenure, with Cerrone's track record, and he would be 4-0 at welterweight at that point, I am 100% okay with him fighting for the welterweight belt. Just give me Donald Cerrone and Robbie Lawler. That's all I want out of life. I don't think it's too much to ask. All right, Jeff, you are Donald Cerrone's biggest fan. He is your favorite fighter of all time, possibly barring Dan Henderson. What did you think about the fight that we haven't already discussed?
Great fight, great performance. Look, he's not going straight back down to lightweight to get an immediate shot. That's just not going to happen. I would, for right now, ride this out at welterweight, but he looked like a contender last night, and I think he could be a contender at welterweight. Do I think he can win the title? No. But a contender, yes.
Yeah, I agree with that. All right, next up. Boy, this was an odd one to watch. Mike Perry, in his UFC debut, knocked the stuffing out of Hyun-Gyu Lim in the first round. I picked Lim here. This was a short notice fight for Perry. Lim looked a full weight class bigger than Mike Perry. He had something like 6 inches of height and 7 of reach. I mean, physically, much bigger than Mike Perry. And Lim, first of all, was way too predictable throwing his right uppercut. You never throw that punch naked. Never. Because you will always get cracked with the counter. You have to set that up. And Lim didn't, and he got clobbered with lefts. He got floored 3 times in this fight. I mean, I don't mean, you know, he slipped or he got caught off balance. I mean, he got hit flush and fell over 3 different times by Mike Perry. On short notice to come in, overcome the size difference, and just stomp a guy who, you know, Lim's been a top 15 guy in the past. Oof, that was, you couldn't have asked for a better debut if you're Mike Perry. You really couldn't have. Lim might want to think about middleweight. A lot of guys have been, you know, making that move to a more natural weight class, what they walk around at. Just a thought for Lim, because, again, he must cut a tremendous amount of weight to make welterweight, because he's an enormous man for that division. And Mike Perry, welcome to the show, man. And I hope your next fight is impressive, because, dang. Jeff, what do you got on old Platinum Mike Perry here? He's someone to keep your eye on?
Good win, good debut. Looking forward to see what he does next.
All right. And kicking off the pay-per-view portion of the card, Tim Means defeated Saba Hamasi in the second round via TKO. This was another short-notice replacement fighter. Means was supposed to fight Sean Strickland, which is a really interesting fight. But Strickland got injured. Hamasi was just so far out of his depth. The pressure of Means made him gas in the first round. Means just kept it on. Hamasi, just, again, he gassed out. He got beat up. The fight got stopped. Not a whole lot here, but, you know, Tim Means, I mean, look, the fight we just talked about was another short-notice guy coming in against a veteran, and the veteran got swamped. Means went out there and he did his job, so, you know, good for him. Not a bad fight to kick things off, especially after a couple of the other fights on the prelims, and we'll get to those in a minute. Jeff, Tim Means, stomping the newbie. Anything?
I have nothing to add.
All right. On the prelims, Cody Garbrandt knocked out Takeya Mizugaki in 48 seconds. This went as expected. Look, I like Mizugaki. I got a soft spot for him. He's been around forever. He likes to fight. I like him. He was so far out of his depth
here. He's a gatekeeper.
He's a gatekeeper. And Cody Garbrandt absolutely blew through that particular gate. Again, 48 seconds, just boom, right hand. Cody Garbrandt has some serious power.
Look, the thing about gatekeepers is gatekeepers are good fighters. They don't want to be the gatekeeper, but they are gatekeepers. That's just how it is. They're called gatekeepers for a reason. And the guys who beat Mizugaki are their champions, or they beat him and they contend for the title. That's what happens when they fight Mizugaki. Or he's the test for potential contenders and he beats them and they move back down. And that's exactly what Mizugaki has been throughout his whole Zuffa career. Well, no longer Zuffa, but his whole WEC and UFC career. He's been a perpetual gatekeeper. And you know what? Sometimes you can get out of that. Look at Michael Bisping. It took him 10 years, and he finally became champion. But before that, he was basically a perpetual gatekeeper. Light heavyweight's perpetual gatekeeper is Ryan Bader. So there you go.
Yeah, Garbrandt called out Dominic Cruz. I want that fight. I'm going to be honest. Look, I know TJ Dillashaw just beat Rafaela Sunsau. I don't want a rematch of a fight that I saw earlier this year.
You could do this fight, but the good thing about bantamweight is there are some legitimate contenders in there right now that could fight Dominic Cruz and produce, I think, some good results. Not just Dillashaw, but you have Cody Garbrandt now, who's, I mean, he's been on a roll. He's looked unbelievable.
Dodson, who are both kind of moving up the ranks.
Dodson is fighting Lineker, so either one of those guys could easily be a contender. And then, look, you got to consider Brian Caraway as well, Robert. I know you don't like that.
I most certainly do not.
You don't like it, but the reality is he beat Aljamain Sterling. So there you go.
Yeah, Aljamain Sterling lost his last fight. I forget who it was to.
So look, you have Dillashaw, you have Cody Garbrandt, you have the winner of Dodson versus Lineker. So, I mean, bantamweight's jumping right now, man. I mean, it's very interesting. It's a very interesting place. It's getting more competitive. And it probably won't be like a top-drawing division anytime soon, but, we're getting some good results here. I like what we're seeing at bantamweight right now.
Yeah, look, I know Dillashaw's got a claim on the on a title shot. His fight with Cruz was I don't want to say it was close, because from where I sit, every time I've rewatched that fight, I've never seen it as close. It was very competitive, and it was a very interesting fight. I love that fight. It took place in January of this year. I don't like rematch. I just don't like rematches that close together when there's no controversy. And I'm sorry, but Clucky going 4-1 for Dillashaw does not controversy make. I don't want to see Alex Caceres fight Yair Rodriguez again. And Clucky went 4-1 for Caceres in that fight. I'm just not a big fan of that. Let Dillashaw fight Faber. I know that has been discussed, and okay. Jeff, we lost Jeff for a moment. He told me this might happen, and he will be calling back in shortly. Anyway, to finish my point, let Dillashaw fight Uriah Faber. You can sell that fight. You can sell it. Let Garbrandt's the interesting fight. I am interested in Garbrandt versus Cruz. Cruz hasn't had to fight someone with Garbrandt's punching power in a long time, if ever. And Garbrandt is a striker. He's got a boxing background. And when you look at what Cruz does, specifically elements of his movement, he took good boxing fundamentals and adjusted them for MMA. And that's not an easy thing to do. But, your average, wrestle boxer like Uriah Faber, and I know that's a tad disingenuous to him and his skill set, I don't care, doesn't know how to deal with what Cruz does. Garbrandt has a boxing background and was a good enough boxer to where he might not just be flummoxed by the fact that Dominic Cruz understands how to move around you and make you miss. I want to see Garbrandt fight Cruz. That's the fight that interests me. And, Dillashaw can fight Faber. I mean, again, you can sell that fight, and I can watch Uriah Faber lose. That's win-win from where I sit. Next up, Raquel Pennington defeated Elizabeth Phillips via unanimous decision. Nothing to see here. A lot of clinch fighting. Not boring clinch fighting, mind you, but a lot of clinch fighting. Artem Lobov defeated Chris Avila via unanimous decision. Artem Lobov sucks. All right? Let me be very clear about this. Artem Lobov sucks, and Chris Avila is worse. Avila had no offense for this entire fight, and Artem Lobov had only marginally more. This was terrible. This fight was terrible. Both parties should be released. I don't ever want to see Artem Lobov fight again. Ever. But he won, so now I get to see him lose at least two more fights before he'll get released. I don't care that he's Conor McGregor's buddy. I don't care that he was on a meaningless season of Tough. He's terrible. Send him away. And Chris Avila should never have been in the UFC at this point. He was not ready on any level for this fight. This was terrible. Kicking off Fox Sports 1, Courtney Casey defeated Randa Markos via armbar in the first round. From what I saw, this was a pretty good fight. There were some good scrambles from both.
Hello? Okay, everybody. Sorry about that. My internet decided to die. Comcast is doing work in my area, and it tends to flicker on and off around about 7 o'clock, and it is deeply frustrating. I apologize for that. Jeff, are you back?
I am here.
Okay. I'll very briefly pick up where I left off about Neil Magny not being ready for that. Lorenz Larkin, good win.
Colby Covington stopped Max Griffin in the first, in the third round with punches. This was terribly one-sided. Covington just wore him out and beat him up. And at middleweight, Marvin Vettori defeated Alberto Uda via submission. Head and arm guillotine choke in the first round. It was a really nice setup, really nice transition. So, not a bad set of prelims. There were only one boring fight, kind of the Pennington-Phillips, and one terrible fight involving Artem Lobov, to the shock of no one. All right, Jeff, what are your burning desires? What do you want to talk about from that set of fights?
Neil Magny might have had a setback, but he will not be beaten, and he will still be the UFC welterweight champion.
All right. That was UFC 202. Thank you to everyone who followed along with the live coverage, who's commented on the report. Last I checked, we were around about 80 comments. Conor McGregor, man, he draws out the people, that's for sure. Again, thank you to everyone. I deeply appreciate it. You are a great group of guys to hang out and talk with during the fights. I try to stay active during the coverage whenever I get a chance between fights. So thank you for all of that. Thank you to everyone who's commented. Generally speaking, you guys are you're very cool. You're very civil to each other. You can disagree without becoming screaming children. And I deeply appreciate that. You guys don't – I never have to worry about being embarrassed by the comment section whenever I link something that I write. So – thank you for that. Much appreciated. UFC on Fox 21. Jeez. One little flip, and now all of a sudden I'm like trying to get a handle on this. The UFC will be at the Rogers Arena in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. There's a pretty good main event here. Damian Maia and Carlos Condit. Condit, I believe, should have been welterweight champion. I scored that fight with him and Lawler for Condit, and I have every other time I've watched that fight. But such is life, I suppose. This is a heck of a fight. Damian Maia's on a roll. Let me see. He's won his last... Jeez, he's won the last five. Yeah, he's on a heck of a roll. I like this fight. Jeff, this is not a, it's not a title fight. It's not a big name fight, even though, fans of the sport know Condit and Maia, but it's not got a lot of casual appeal. And it's headlining Fox, so, before I kind of get into what I think is going to happen, what do you think about this fight?
It's a solid welterweight contest. Either one of these guys could be fighting for the title down the line if Tyron Woodley stops pretending he's, the next Conor McGregor and thinks he's going to get every super fight in the world instead of fighting Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. It's possible. I wouldn't mind seeing either one of these guys contend for the title if they win.
All right. This is a tough one to call for me. Because Damian Maia's you got Condit? Carlos Condit's very, very good. Damian Maia's jiu-jitsu is just so good. And Maia excels not just at jiu-jitsu, but he has mastered the art, generally speaking, of shutting down his opponent's game. It's one thing to be a great jiu-jitsu practitioner. It's another to know how to make that work in MMA. It helps if you're so good that, when he fought Matt Brown, he pulled Matt Brown into full mount. That's how good his jiu-jitsu is. He doesn't care if you start mounting him. He's fine with that. He'll still beat you at it. It's crazy, and here's the other thing about that. Carlos Condit has very good submission skills of his own. But his ability to stop guys from going to the mat with him be that takedowns offensively or pulling guard, is not the best. And I'm not sure if Maya can actually submit him. I mean, like, Maya's submission skills, again, are tremendous, but I'm not completely sold on his being able to finish someone who knows as much as Condit does. You know, if this were three rounds, I would take Damian Maya. I need to say that. But over five rounds, I might regret this, but right now I'm going with Condit. It should be a very interesting fight to watch play out, though. All right, co-main event. You ever thought you'd hear that Anthony Pettis was in a make-or-break fight, Jeff?
Not this soon. After he was recently champion just a little over a year ago.
Yeah, he lost that belt March of 15. But yeah, Anthony Pettis, the first UFC fighter to ever be on the cover of a Wheaties box.
He's 0-3, and he's about to go 0-4. Charles Oliveira is winning this fight.
Yeah. Pettis is on a three-fight losing streak. Crazy. And he's fighting it. Charles Oliveira is not a gimme. Oliveira is, in fact, 5-1 over his last six.
But Oliveira's always got some sort of issues where he's got the weight issues, you know, or something or other. I mean, he missed weight by 4 pounds in his last fight. I mean, he's consistently missed weight at featherweight.
Yeah, fat Charles Oliveira really ought to be at lightweight at this point.
Pettis is fighting at featherweight for the first time here. There was a time where he was very likely going to fight Jose Aldo for the featherweight title, you know, because of the situation at lightweight. So he was going for a faster shot at featherweight, and he ended up getting the shot at lightweight anyway, and he won. Now he's trying to reinvent himself. I don't know, man. I just don't. Pettis could very well prove me wrong. But just the way they match up, I'm kind of favoring Oliveira right now, partly because it's Pettis moving into a new weight class. And Pettis is a fairly big and long lightweight, and I'm just not sure how I feel about him moving down to featherweight. I don't really think I like it. If it was earlier in his career, I think it'd be okay. But at his age, at this point, I'm not really sure if featherweight is going to be a good fit for him. But we'll see.
The most interesting part of this fight is both men versus the scale, because fat Charles Oliveira, and I have to look, you missed weight 3 times, buddy. I had to call John Lineker fat John Lineker for every flyweight fight after he missed weight that many times, and I still call him fat John Lineker at bantamweight for a little bit as well. You missed weight 3 times, you're fat Charles Oliveira. Oliveira can win this fight. He's got the kickboxing skills to kind of hang
and
with
the
Pettis. Not
skills.
And yeah, his jiu-jitsu is very good. He has a very good guard.
He's an underrated fighter. He's the first man to ever submit Hatsu Hiyoki.
Yeah, his choke game is very good. His guard game is very good.
And, I mean, he didn't make weight for the fight, but he did submit Miles Jury, who had never been submitted before either.
Jury's a very good jiu-jitsu practitioner, and, yeah, Oliveira handled him on the mat. I am really torn here.
Oliveira, you want to pick Oliveira, Robert. I know you do, because you picked Pettis to beat Barboza, and you got burned there. Your faith in Pettis has been rattled, because we were both very high on Pettis. We thought he was going to be like the lightweight John Jones, and just he's been looking flat lately. I don't know what it is, but I think part of it is that I think he waits too long to pull the trigger, and I think he's way too patient and way too relaxed. He always kind of waits for his opponents to do something and respond, but I feel like it's gotten worse as of late. I don't know. Whatever it is, I hope he gets it back, because when he's on, I think he is, you know, exciting to watch. But I'm just feeling – something in my gut just tells me Oliveira, and I want to be the guy to pick Oliveira. I'm picking Oliveira.
Here's my hesitance in picking Oliveira is –
He's inconsistent.
Oh, crud. All right, hang on. I'm going to make this pick, and then I'm going to call back in briefly.
Okay.
I hope that nothing else. You should be fine to keep talking.
Okay. So next up, we have a women's strawweight fight. We have Paige VanZant versus Beck Rawlings. Paige VanZant is fighting for the first time since her loss to Rose Namajunas. And then we have Beck Rawlings, who's been doing well lately. She's won her last two fights, beating Lisa Ellis and Seo Hiham. So this is an important fight. Beck Rawlings is looking to keep her momentum going, and Paige VanZant is looking to get her win back and get her career back on track. Honestly, the way these two match up, I like Paige VanZant. She had a rough fight against Thug Rose, but I like her aggression. I like her forward movement and control. I like how, I mean, she has an unlimited gas tank, and she's still, even though she got dominated and beat by Thug Rose, she showed a remarkable amount of heart in that fight, and that's important to me, and I think Beck Rawlings is good. I just, you know, I think VanZant is a little more well-rounded, and I think she's going to move forward constantly with her aggression and technique and just make it a rough night for Beck Rawlings. So Paige VanZant all the way here.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Okay.
Okay. Are you back on, Robert?
I am back on, and we're going to hope nothing else.
Okay.
Nothing went wrong. It's Blog Talk's a funny system to use.
Right.
What
do you think of my assessment of VanZant versus Hattie Beck?
I agree, generally speaking. I'm not a big fan of Beck Rawlings. I actually thought she lost that fight with Seo Hiham. She doesn't do well when pressured. VanZant is mostly pressure. I don't think Rawlings has the technical ability or the grappling ability, which was kind of where Rose, because Rose beat VanZant everywhere, but VanZant, when she gets beat at distance, could close the disc, could fight close with other fighters where she's had that issue, and she couldn't do that successfully against Namajunas. I think she can do that against Rawlings if they wind up in the clinch. I think, I got VanZant. I am going to, there are two reasons I'm actually going to pick Anthony Pettis over Charles Oliveira. Oliveira's a bit chinny, and his striking style is not as powerful or as rhythm-based as Barboza's.
That has
two. Well, that too, but specifically Pettis can wait, and he and Oliveira can snipe at each other, and I think that favors Pettis.
I'm sorry.
Whereas Pettis letting
Barboza
set up was
with
a huge mistake.
Okay. So you're still going to pick Pettis. It's okay.
I'm going to pick Pettis, and here's the other reason. If I pick Pettis and he loses to Barboza and he goes 0-4, he needs to be cut, and I'm okay with my pick being the deciding factor in his performance. If there's some deity out there that is just trying to make me look stupid, I'm okay with being the reason Anthony Pettis goes to Bellator.
Okay, so basically you're saying if Anthony Pettis does lose this fight and he goes 0-4, you're not going to be completely miserable and upset when you pick a fight wrong like this.
Something like that.
Okay. I support this.
Again, Oliveira can win that fight, but Yeah, and maybe I'm still just kind of blinded by the fact that Pettis used to be great, but I mean, his back's against the wall here. He's got to win. All right, at lightweight, this is a rematch from a fight that I actually had as my fight of the year for, what was it, 14?
I feel this was 2012 when they first fought.
It is. It was 12. That was my fight of the year, the fight between Jim Miller and Joe Lozon.
And I covered that fight live.
I think that was 411's fight of the year, too. That was a tremendous fight. Now we're running it back. Several years later.
It's not a bad fight to run back, of all fights.
It isn't. It was a great fight the first time. Jim Miller, I love Jim Miller. I really do. But he's in a terrible spot. He is 2-4 in his last six. Now, those losses are to, well, three really good fighters in Diego Sanchez.
Right. And he beat Takanori Gomi.
Yeah,
and
but
beating Takanori Gomi at this point in MMA is kind of like beating, like saying, I beat up your grandmother. I'm sorry to all the grandmas out there, the tough grandmas.
His other losses are to Donald Cerrone, Beneil Dariush, and Michael Chiesa. Now, again, those are three top-shelf lightweights, and in Cerrone's case, now a pretty good welterweight. And he lost to Diego Sanchez, and, yeah, I don't like Diego Sanchez at all. He beat Gomi, but he's clearly on the downside of his career. Lozon is trading wins and losses, but Lozon... he beat the crap out of Diego Sanchez, stopped him in the first round. That was actually the first...
Another performance bonus out of it, too.
Yeah, that was the first time that Diego Sanchez had been stopped due to strikes. His only other TKO loss was because of a cut on his forehead. The one BJ Penn opened up that immediately had his soul leaking out of it. It's a nasty cut. But Joe Lozon has found some really good form lately. And Jim Miller's on the downside of his career. This is a heck of a fight. It was great the first time. Man, I don't know. I don't know which way I'm going to go here. I don't know how this fight's going to go. There, you know, Lozon's submission ability is great, but his wrestling's a tad iffy. I mean, Jim Miller's grappling is tremendous. Lozon's got a bit more punching power, but Miller's technique is generally better. I love this fight.
I'm picking
Miller.
You know
what? I'm going to go with Miller, too. I'm not going to be shocked if Joe Lozon wins. I'm not going to be upset if I get this one wrong, because this should be another truly great fight. But, yeah, I'm just, I don't know. Something about their matchup, I think, just kind of favors Jim Miller. I could be wrong, but...
Both guys are excellent grapplers, but on the ground, I mean, even with his recent losses, I feel like Miller is the better ground fighter.
All right. Yeah, looking forward to that one. This is a good main card. All right, on the prelims, the first four of these are actually also on Fox. Oh, that'll be fun. Sam Alvey, the man who is going to defeat Dan Henderson in 20 years for the middleweight title, because Dan Henderson is going to be middleweight champion for that long. His words, not mine. Is fighting Kevin Casey. Man, I want to like Kevin Casey, you know? I really do. Hang on. Let me explain. I've seen some of Kevin Casey's jiu-jitsu skills. And he is a very good fighter. He's a very good jiu-jitsu guy. Unfortunately, most of his jiu-jitsu skill seems to require the gi. Now, he's coming off of that split decision draw with Elvis Mutapchik. I think I scored that fight for Casey, actually. He lost to Rafael Nadal before that. What is, I kind of want to like Kevin Casey, but I just can't do it. His performances are so... He's got bad luck. Kevin Casey has bad luck. That draw in his last fight, the eye poke no contest after he got gouged. He had another no contest, I think, the fight, not before that, but the one prior to that, he had a no contest. That was also kind of injury related, or there was a failed drug. There's just weirdness surrounding Kevin Casey. I'm taking Sam Alvey, Smiling Sam, via TKO, probably in the first round. Lightweight, there's a lot of the Canadian contingent on this card. Chad Laprise is fighting Thibault Gaudy. Chad Laprise, 2-fight losing streak. But that was the Pearson fight, which he could have won. I'll go with Laprise there. Gaudy's been not too impressive from what I remember. At featherweight, Enrique Barzola is fighting Kyle Bochniak. Do I know either of these gentlemen? I feel like Barzola's fought in the UFC. I'm not sure about Bochniak. I'll go with Barzola based on that. At lightweight, Shane Campbell, who still has a job for some reason, despite being on a 2-fight losing streak. Campbell's kickboxing is very, very good. Fortunately, the rest of his game still has some catching up to do. He's fighting Felipe Silva, who I do not know at all. I'll go with Campbell. On Fight Pass, Gareth McClellan is fighting Alessio De Chirico, who has fought for the UFC before, I seem to recall. McClellan coming off of that loss to Magnus Siddenblad. But Magnus Siddenblad's good. I'll go with McClellan there. I'll have to remind myself of who De Chirico is. At bantamweight, Marlon Vera is fighting Ning Guangyo. I like this fight, actually. Vera, coming off of that loss to Davy Grant, he's been trading wins and losses in the UFC. And Ning Guangyo lost a split decision to Marco Beltran that I seem to recall thinking he won. So I'll go with Guangyo there. And kicking everything off at middleweight, Ryan Janis? I'm going with Janis. Will fight Adam Hunter. I don't know either of those gentlemen. I believe they are both making their UFC debuts. So I will go with Janis off the top of my head. Because, you know what? No, I'm actually going to flip a coin. Hang on. I trust the coin more than my own judgment in the dark. Yeah, coin says Janis. All right. Jeff, there's a couple of really good fights on those prelims. What are you looking forward to?
I don't have any burning desires.
Really? You got nothing?
Good main card. Undercard is not quite as solid to me this time.
Alrighty. And again, that the 27th of August, I will have live coverage in the MMA Zone of 411mania.com, so stop by and say hello for that. I appreciate it. All right. Jeff, what's in the news? What do we got to talk about? We just had a big night of fights. What's come out of that? What's on the wire? What do we got to talk about?
I mean, there's the business with John Jones. I don't know what to make of it. Dana White did an interview. He said Jones may be cleared of his USADA violation. I don't know what that means. I don't know if it's true. Jones released the videos stating, you know, he seems to think there's good news coming for him. I don't know if that means a reduced suspension or if it will be like a situation with some of the other fighters who have potential violations but did not end up having to get suspended due to some, you know, due to extenuating circumstances. I don't know where this is going, but we'll see. UFC 204, the main event is set. Dan Henderson will get his title shot against Michael Bisping at UFC 204. So let me see here. that will be in Manchester, England, at the Manchester Arena. And so basically, it's going to air live in prime time in the U.S., and it's going to start at basically, I think, 4 a.m. in the Manchester area. So
I think the main event starts at 4 a.m. in the Manchester area. The rest of it's going to start much earlier.
That's what I'm saying. In Manchester, it'll be at 4 a.m. In the U.S., it will air like at regular, like prime time, basically.
I'm not sure how many tickets they're going to sell for an event that's going to start around midnight.
I mean, come on. It's one of their own defending their title in England. You got to think that's going to draw. I mean, that's going to draw people. Bisping has been a good draw for the UFC. You know, not in terms of pay per view, but in terms of TV ratings and gate attendance, especially in England. So I think it will do okay, just because you have like an American versus a Brit in England. I mean, when has that ever happened? I mean, Michael Bisping is England's first UFC champion. So there you go.
True, but I don't know. I mean, it's just that's. I mean, I'm not saying they're going to be fighting in front of nobody, but that's a really rough hourly setup there for anyone going to that live.
We'll see how it does. Francisco Rivera was flagged for a potential out of competition drug test after his fight with Eric Perez at UFC 201. Let's see, at least he lost that fight, so that's a fight he lost. Let's see. Those are the major news bits I think I've come across. But I think we got into the union business last week, so there we go. It definitely looks like CM Punk is fighting next month, so I think
plenty of weeks between now and then for him to re-injure something.
Well, it's possible, so we'll see.
Hey, we've seen fights fall out the night of. Just say, until they're in the cage, nothing is certain.
Right. You get that from me. I'm the one who said that originally.
You brought that up, and I think like the next night, the next event that I covered after we started having that conversation, somebody like badly rolled their ankle just doing warm ups before their fight. And I mean, you couldn't fight with it, and he wasn't doing anything that he shouldn't have been doing. He just rolled his ankle, and it swelled. They actually showed it on the. I think this was on Fight Pass for this fight at least. Poor guy, his ankle had swollen up. I mean, it was grotesque, really. Like, you can't fight if that happens. I understand it, and you know, you warm up. Yeah, you know, just.
But I mean, regarding the John Jones business, I don't want to get too much into that just because there's still so much we don't know. And I mean, Dana White says a lot of things so that don't really come to fruition. So I don't really want to go on that either. So I'll wait until they make some sort of official announcement or ruling there before I get into that.
Yeah, there's a lot of unknown still around that whole situation. And honestly, I'm fine not knowing and waiting until there's complete information. The rest of you should do the same. You know, people out there, we got to slow down, people. We don't need everything right away. All right, if that's all the news worth talking about in the immediate future, I think we're about ready to get out of here. So, Jeff, what do you got to plug?
Check out my review of King's Clave Final Fantasy 15. It's the companion piece to the new video game coming out that just got delayed. Check out my review of Suicide Squad, still number one at the box office this weekend, all things considered, even though that Robert absolutely hated it. So check out that
pretty much every minute of it. You people seeing this movie should be ashamed of yourself.
For the DC fans out there, I'm probably one of the few critics who actually like the movie, so that's another reason for you to tune in and read my review. Yeah. All right, My column this week was about Diaz and Conor McGregor. Thanks to all the readers out there who read and commented on it. Got a nice amount of comments there. I think my next one will be about Conor McGregor. Have it. You got to defend that belt. So that's what it will be on. And I'll see you next week to recap Maya versus Conor, Robert.
We will also be previewing Fight Night 93, Barlovsky. Arlovsky versus Barnett. That ought to be a good one. All right. As for me, you can read my report on UFC 202. It is in the MMAzone 411 Mania. A lot of comments. Conor McGregor has a vocal fan base, and I appreciate all of you who are, you know, accommodating and engaging with the people who don't show up all the time. Again, I appreciate you being adult about it, disagreeing appropriately, explaining, you know, talking instead of screaming, explaining instead of hurling insults. I appreciate you guys for the way you conduct yourselves. So thank you again. Again, Saturday, I'll be here in the MMA Zone of 411 Mania for UFC on Fox 23. Jeff and I will be back next week reviewing that and 21, excuse me, and previewing UFC Fight Night 93, Arlovsky versus Barnett. Also on that card, Alexander Gustafsson, Ryan Bader, Nick Hein. Yeah, there's a lot of the usual European suspects on that card, which is fine. They exist. They're at the promotion for a reason, and it's fights that take place in places like Germany, which is where that one will come from. All right. This Tuesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, Mark Radulich and I will be taking a quick look at the summer from a movie perspective. It should be interesting. This has been an odd summer. It's been a very odd summer for movies, so we'll talk about that. We'll also talk a little bit about movies that we saw but didn't get to review together, so tune in. That should be interesting. We should have some fun there. I think I have something coming up in the MMA Zone. I have to talk briefly with Larry Zonka about it. But I wrote up my chase for Clucky when he came to Utah a few weeks back because it amused me to do so, and I wanted to make sure it was recorded for posterity. And, you know, if there's space in the MMA Zone, I'm going to, like, hit him up on Twitter in the near future and ask him if that one might go up, because it's, you know, just, it's not what I usually write. It's not, you know, analysis. It's not an op-ed. It's intended to be slightly more humorous. So we'll see how that goes. And if that does go live, I'll be sure to link it in various places. But until next week, for Jeff Harris, I'm Robert Winfrey. Thanking you all again for tuning into the show. We go live every Sunday at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We'll see you next week. Until then, please continue to be well, be safe, and behave.